Very good morning to you, my dear listeners. Very good morning to you, Namibia. How is this morning? How is this Monday morning? It's a beautiful Monday morning. I hope you are at your, you are at your optimal state, you know, to face the day and the week. And well, you thank God, eh? Thank God that you are still, you know, still healthy, still breathing, you're still alive. You know, this is the moment that you should be grateful to whoever, whether it's Allah, Buddha, God, Yahweh. You know, yeah, thank God that you are still actually breathing. So good morning to you, and thanks to Luis and your whole team for Early Morning Scoop, and for always keeping us informed as we make our way to work, or as we get up to face our daily chores and responsibilities. So good morning to you, and welcome to Eagle FM. Thanks for joining us. And it's always our pleasure to be in your company. So my name is Mike Oshavelli, and you are tuned into Unpacking the Day. This is a show where we dive deep into the stories, events, and issues that shape our world. This show is all about breaking down the headlines, exploring the context behind the news, and understanding how it impacts our lives. So whether it is the latest development in politics, our business, our culture, or social issues, we are here to make sense of it all together. So, but it's not just about us talking. It's about you. Share your thoughts, your opinions and perspectives on the topics that matter most to you. And this is your space to unpack the headlines and get to the heart of the stories. So, and as usual, every Monday from around a few minutes left, from few minutes to go, maybe some minute, 5 minutes or 6 minutes, so. So from seven, quarter past eight, we will cross to our studio in Windhoek. I'm in Ondangwa. Cross to our studio in Windhoek for our F&B Namibia segment. And after that, we will come back to me and continue as usual. So around quarter to eight, we will cross to Windhoek, to my colleague in Windhoek, for F&B Namibia. Stay tuned for that. And welcome if you're just joining us at this morning. It is the 19th of May. The year is 2025. So what happened on this day in Africa? So nothing much happened. Nothing really significant happened on this day in Africa. So in 1930, the South African Parliament, this is now apartheid parliament, the apartheid government, passed a legislation extending the franchise to women, to white women. So nearly two decades after white men first gained a voting rights. So this change reshaped the country's political landscape, doubling the white electorate and further entrenching racial division by explicitly, you know, excluding black, colored, and the Indian population from the ballot. So that was now they passed that legislation for the white ladies also to start voting. So, and also excluding the white, still excluding the colored, the Indian, and the black populations. So, and African Liberation Day celebration. So before being formalized on the 25th of May, the Pan-African, the Pan-Africanist around the world often mark 19 May, which also the date for the days of the date birth of Malcolm X. They marked 19th of May as a day of solidarity and struggles against colonialism. So, and these commemorations helped galvanize support for newly independent state and also, and kept liberation on the global agenda until the Organization of African Unity codified African Liberation Day in 1963. So, and today, the 19th of May, our thought for the day, where there is no vision, the people perish. Where there is no vision, the people perish. So the proverb emphasized the importance of having clear direction, leadership, and purpose in any group, community, or nation. So without a vision, a defined plan, goal, or guiding principle, people lose their sense of purpose and unity, leading to confusion, stagnation, or decline. So vision encourages people to think beyond immediate concerns and plan for a sustainable future. So without such forward thinking, a society risks making a short-sighted decisions that undermine long-term prosperity. So, and this proverb applies not just to the nation, not just to nations or communities, but also to personal growth. So businesses and organizations. So having a vision ensures purpose, direction, and the ability to overcome challenges effectively. So that's our thought of the day. Hopefully it guides you throughout the day today. Where there is no vision, the people perish. So if you're joining us, this is Eagle FM, and in a few minutes, so we will be crossing to our colleagues in Windhoek for the F&B Namibia segment, which will be coming up at in 3 minutes or so. So, Badel, wherever you are, you can listen to Eagle FM or what you need. If you have a mobile phone, or what you need is just to download the Eagle FM mobile app, and you are good to go. So, and you will be instantly connected to news updates, your favorite show. And if you missed it, you can always, go to the podcast and be able to listen to that again. And so much more of features on that. And if you want to stay in the know with business, economic news, and the latest policy development, so you can grab your digital copy of The Villager every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. So all you need to do, send a WhatsApp message with your name and email at 081-241-44, 081-241-44. So now we're going to cross to Windhoek, to my colleagues in Windhoek, and we will be back around 8.
Get social with us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn. Our handle is Eagle FM Namibia.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Back your preconceptions of technology. Explore the apps that are redefining the future. Out with the old and in with the new. From carrying physical hard copy hymn books to the world of digital hymn book versions. See the bold new expressions of the Imba app. Feel like you're part of something bigger. Experience the digital hymn book in the palm of your hands. Behold, the new and improved Imba that brings together various hymn books under one app. Here to unite a nation and spread the gospel. Some of the featured hymn books on Imba app are the Elsine Hangano, Rio Sherero Omaimburiro, the Catholic Simane Kakarunga, the Afrikaans Sing Voor Dieren, and many more. Contact contact us today if you'd like for your church hymn book to be added onto the list of IMBA hymn books. 081-23-58-063. You can also email us at digital@omalighty.com. Download and discover IMBA today. You can find it on the App Store as well as the Google Play Store.
Now tuned in to the F&B segment, proudly brought to you by F&B Namibia.
A very good morning to all the Eagle FM listeners. You are now tuned in to another edition of the F&B segment, proudly brought to you by F&B Namibia. Today I am joined by Theo. Theo, good morning.
Good morning, sir.
How are you doing this morning?
The morning is lovely. How is it with you?
I'm doing well, thank you. Welcome to another edition of the F&B segment. So let's get right into it. Give us a brief intro of who you are, what you do, and we'll take it from there.
Thank you so much for the opportunity. My name is Theo Hidulika. I'm employed at FNB Namibia as a fraud analyst, where we assist our clients with various activities or various cases, as well as just banking in general. So FNB, Bank of the People,
yes.
We're always available and we're always here for you.
So, as a fraud analyst, what exactly does that entail?
All right. My job entails assisting, assessment, as well as short investigation. What we mean by this is we are the first contact for our clients that are being defrauded, scammed, knowingly, unknowingly.
Mm-hmm.
So, in my particular role, what I do is we see what happened, what was compromised, how can we stop that, where the funds went, or what was taken, how we can recover that. So it's a whole process that I cannot go into detail, but we are the first point of contact when our clients need assistance. So we are the guys that look after them and make sure that they are protected. So that's basically a short version of what I do.
So when a customer calls a fraud line, there's a chance they'll be talking to you.
Yes.
And that fraud line, can you just give the number for the listeners?
All right. So our number is
061-299-2222.
That is FNB's official contact center number.
Mm-hmm.
So you can call that anytime. We are open from 8 to 10 on weekends and 7 to 10 on weekdays. Where we're open on public holiday as well and Sundays. So it's
anytime
we're available. Yes.
Yes. So let's get into bank fraud. What exactly is bank fraud?
All right. So the short version of it, it's basically an attempt or successful attempt to take funds from the bank and its client unlawfully, unauthorized. So this can come in many forms.
Mm-hmm.
Scammers are always busy. They're always busy coming up with new tactics, new programs to deceive you. The most common one is an impersonator.
Yeah.
You get a call, you want something, and you divulge your personal information. That is how they get access to your account. And most of the time, our clients are not aware of this. And it's such a big issue in the country right now that our client needs to be vigilant, especially with the impersonator calls. They will call with the story, with something that they are making up. And you, as the client, you will believe. So it's very important that you stay focused, you stay alert, because they'll catch you at the most unexpected time.
Yeah.
By the time you realize what happened, it might be too late. It might be costly as well. So to the listeners, to our clients at large, be vigilant at all time. Call us on our official numbers. Do not cling colleagues. Do not take part in these investment schemes.
Yeah.
Because these guys come up with different tactics to compromise and take your hard and funds.
Yeah, and I'm actually glad you are here, someone from the fraud line, because we've heard that people also call customers saying that, for example, now impersonating that, "Hi, I'm Theo from the F&B Fraud Center. I need so and so." So please just emphasize to the listeners some of the things that F&B would never call a client to request.
All right. So one thing that our clients in the nation at large need to take into consideration is that your bank will never call you from a cell phone number. That's the first thing. We don't call our clients after hours. Furthermore, the bank will never ask your personal banking information. This includes your card numbers, your card PIN, your account numbers, your passwords, anything related to your banking, the bank will never ask you for your personal information, as that is your information and only you should know it.
Mm-hmm.
So whenever a client gets a call, we are calling from ABCD. We have picked up ABCD. Can you kindly provide us your card information? You should already pick up that that is a scammer. That is somebody that is trying to have access, unlawful access to your account.
Mm-hmm.
So FNB will never ask you your card information. FNB will never ask you your usernames, your passwords, your PINs, your personal banking information. That is sensitive information that only you should know.
Yeah.
So we will never, never, ever do that.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
And well, one of our listeners messaged us over the weekend saying that she fell victim to a quote-unquote investment scheme, which is how she was defrauded of her money. So for the listeners, what are some other signs that a scam might be taking place, whether that's over the phone, online, through text message or anything like that? What are some things people should look out for?
All right. The most easiest one is the emails.
Mm-hmm.
If you get a link,
mm-hmm.
look at the email address. What type of email is this? Does it look legitimate?
Yeah.
Search the company online. Is it a legitimate company?
Mm-hmm.
Secondly, look at what type of information are these people going to ask you?
Mm-hmm.
Most of the time, they will say you need to make an investment for you to get a larger investment. That is already something which is suspicious. Or you need to pay a certain amount for you to get a payout.
Yeah.
So be very vigilant on that. The calls that comes in, if your gut feeling is telling you that no, something is wrong here, hang up, call us on the right channels.
Mm-hmm.
Secondly, if this person is asking you too many information and they are being aggressive or they are trying to demand, no, we need your card information. No, we need your PIN too for this to go through.
Yeah.
Then that is a scam. So your gut feelings will always tell you what's happening,
mm-hmm.
and you should always act on it. And if you do become now a casualty in that, the mm-hmm. first thing you need to do is contact us immediately.
Mm-hmm.
You can also use your digital tools on your app or online banking to cancel your cards if they are compromised, but contact us immediately so that we can assist you in securing your funds, securing your account, and see what transpired and how we can assist you further. But your gut feeling is very important. Pick up on the small keys. The tone in the person that's calling, the mm-hmm. number, what type of information are they asking? Mm-hmm. Are they aggressive? You know, so be very vigilant. It's the small things that will tell you that this is a scam.
Yes, most definitely. So now if I'm a client, I notice that a scam is taking place, or I notice that I have been scammed already. Are you able to walk us through some of the steps, in the procedure of reporting such an incident? Like, do I have to, I don't know, maybe submit my ID number? Do I have to physically go to the bank and so on? What does that recovery process look like?
All right. So if you suspect of being scammed or you're scammed, the first thing that you need to do is act.
Mm-hmm.
Act immediately.
Mm-hmm.
Contact your bank on the line that I provided. I'll provide it again. 061-299-22.
Mm-hmm.
Report this incident. If you have access to your online banking or app blocked, your cards, everything that you might think was compromised, it's better to block.
Yeah.
And also then change your passwords. Change your passwords to your online banking. Change your passwords to your cell phone banking.
Mm-hmm.
Your e-wallets. Change them immediately. But the first thing you need to do is act and call the contact center. We are always available.
Mm-hmm.
Now what happens from there is an internal process. But usually what we will do is we will investigate. We have dedicated team, our forensics team, our arrest team that will take over.
Mm-hmm.
And we also need your part. What transpired? When did it transpire? Who called you? Which number called you? Did you save this number? What did you provide?
Mm-hmm.
Every piece of information is key for us to be able to assist you at a faster rate and accurate rate. So, keep all records of the communication between you and this individual,
mm-hmm.
but trust your instincts. If it sounds wrong, it's mostly wrong.
Yeah.
It's not worth saying that you won $1,000 and then you lose $10,000 in the process. So be vigilant.
Most definitely.
Yes.
So, you know, with the banking online, it's very convenient, something that a lot of us have now come accustomed to. But with that convenience comes now the risk element. What are some safety tips you can share when it comes to online banking in particular? How do people protect themselves when it comes to online banking and transactions?
All right. Online banking is our way of giving you access to your account mm-hmm. without you needing to visit one of our branches.
Mm-hmm.
FNB is so innovative and so updated that we have world-class systems with world-class defensive mechanism in place. But you as a client, what can you do to protect yourself further? Unique passwords.
Mm-hmm.
Create passwords that only you know, with special characters, numbers, capital letters, and so forth.
Yeah. If your name is Theo, don't make your password
yes,
Theo1.
Don't make Theo1. Yes, exactly. You can make it Eagle FM, the Namibian at 525, you know, something that cannot be easily guessed. You should also have two-factor authorization. This is usually for your cards.
Mm-hmm.
It's also available on our digital platform. What this means is every time you try to make an online purchase or every time an online purchase is attempted on your account,
mm-hmm.
you will get a notification that you must approve it. So that is very, 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 very good. Secondly, avoid using public Wi-Fis. Avoid downloading softwares that can give access, remote access to your phone.
Mm-hmm.
Most of us, what we don't know is that there are certain apps that can give access to your phone. It's like a back key
yeah.
into your phone, which has your banking application on. So that can also be a risk. Do not use your online banking on your colleague's computer, on your friend's computer, because computer saves and it can save your password.
Exactly.
So the small steps, the small things that you do in every day will protect you.
Mm-hmm.
So don't share your passwords. Be alert. Keep your information safe. And yeah. Try not to use multiple devices at one time because you never know who has access to your device. Most of the time, it's the people that might be close to you, might be people that you are not aware of.
Yeah.
But it's up to you to protect yourself. And it's the small steps that will help you always.
Most definitely. Theo, is there any last message you'd like to give to the listeners before we let you go this morning? And please share the contact number one last time as well.
All right. To our listeners and our clients, it's very important that you stay vigilant, stay awake.
Mm-hmm.
If it doesn't sound right, it's not right. Is it too good to be true? It's not true. Always contact the bank when you feel something suspicious is going on. Always mm-hmm. contact the bank when you're unsure. We are always available to help you. Stay alert. Be careful where you place your phones, your cards, especially in the public domain, and be safe, guys. It's getting out of hand, and we are here to protect you, but we need you guys to also look after yourself. The small steps that I just gave, it's very important to you. And like I said, if you are feeling that something is wrong, call the contact center, 061-299-2222. We are always available to assist you anytime, any day. That is why FNB is saying, how can we help you?
Exactly, exactly. Theo, thank you very much for your time today. And this has been another edition of the FNB segment, proudly brought to you by FNB Namibia. And we will see you again next week, Monday, same time, same place.
This has been the FNB segment, proudly brought to you by FNB Namibia. Catch the FNB segment every Monday from 7:45.
Did you know that in Namibia, over 1.4 million people use their mobile device to access the internet? So why not meet your current and potential customers where they already are? With over 600,000 cumulative users around the world, between the Eagle FM and Imba mobile apps, Eagle Media House has the perfect digital platforms for you to advertise your business, upcoming events, weddings, vacancies, funerals, or any other announcement that you
get
have
social with us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn. Our handle is Eagle FM Namibia.
Eagle FM.
Back your preconceptions of technology. Explore the apps that are redefining the future. Out with the old and in with the new. From carrying physical hard copy hymn books to the world of digital hymn book versions. See the bold new expressions of the Imba app. Feel like you're part of something bigger. Experience the digital hymn book in the palm of your hands. Behold, the new and improved Imba that brings together various hymn books under one app. Here to unite a nation and spread the gospel. Some of of the featured hymn books on Imba App are The Elsin Eangano, De Sherero o Maimburiro, The Catholics Imane Kakaruga, The Africans Sing for Dira, and many more. Contact us today if you'd like for your church hymn book to be added onto the list of Imba hymn books. 081-2358-063. You can also email us at digital@omalaiti.com. Download and discover Imba today.
Listen to Eagle FM.
Need lightning fast internet? Barrage is covered. The network Namibia relies on. Whether for business or pleasure, Paratus' cutting-edge technology ensures both reliable and speedy internet connectivity. We exist to serve your needs through a high-quality network and pride ourselves in offering client service excellence. Connect to Paratus today. Visit us online at paratus.africa/Namibia or call us on 083-300-1000.
Always, always. So welcome back, and make sure you always tune in from quarter to eight. You tune in for F&B segment, which really comes with some of those practical tips and ways how to actually protect your money. So that was my colleague HD and Leo from F&B. So we continue as usual. We are back here in Ondangwa. So please stay tuned. We're gonna try to get to our first guest on the show. So please tune while we try to reach her as quickly as possible. So please stay tuned.
Omutiha kutekirwa kakuna ii matina omjo chikao shafa sana na longe shifa ya eshiwike moshiwana ii moya o ota ingongo tisa mwene anange shifa ya Namibia ombitombwa na wa olonjika seitha nina omayakuro ni randisoma yue yonge shifa yoyeo kupikira mo Eagle FM Media House ngoe tuende tuimemeha uu kakombanga nina kara omkwashi pareki uimwepo yomo programa detu Moambo, dengera selma, odara heta tuimu. Datu, heari hamano tano, oniyaji. Eagle FM, the eye.
Listen to Eagle FM in Ludritz at 91.2 FM. Listen to Eagle FM in Omthea at 90.5. Listen to Eagle FM in Mariental at 101.2. Listen to Eagle FM in Okahanja at 104. Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear or favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
So. Not a fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? Any person who does not have capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to do.
In part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past.
Mm.
And it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
All right, welcome back. And if you are just joining us, you are tuned into Unpacking the Day. And I'm your host, Mike Oshavedi. So last week, Namibia unveiled its first foreign direct investment report, revealing an outstanding $114.9 billion in foreign direct investment since 2021. So this surge, driven by hydrocarbon discoveries in the Orange Basin and also bold pro-investment reform, it's making waves internationally, but what does it mean for ordinary Namibians? We have seen exciting success stories like Namibia berries in Divundu, which exports fruit globally while creating hundreds of jobs locally, and the clean energy green hydrogen pilot in Wavish Bay, which is positioning Namibia as a renewable energy leader. So, but
And
with 70% of this investment still tied up in capital-intensive industries, we have to ask, are these billion really creating the kind of jobs and opportunities that transform lives? So today, I'm joined by Memenangula Wanja, the Chief Executive Officer of the Namibia Investment Promotion and Development Board, to unpack how this influx of foreign capital is shaping our nation. Good morning, Mewanja. Good morning. Are you there?
Good morning. Yes, I'm here.
All right. Good morning. How are you?
I'm well, thank you. How are you?
I'm all right. So great to have you on Unpacking the Day this morning. So let's start off with how Namibia has, as I said earlier in my introduction, has recorded 114.9 billion in FDI since 2021. What were the key factors that drove this massive growth?
Yeah, no, thank you very much for the opportunity to engage with you and your audience this morning.
Yeah.
So looking at really the key at the key success factors that lead to increase in FDI, the simple one is about, yes, narratives, and it's really about investor sentiments, the climate that you have, and the messaging.
Yeah.
It plays a role, but of course it's supported by many others.
Yeah.
So I think what we have seen since about 2020, it's really the messaging of government that is saying we are a friendly country, we want to attract investments, we want to work with investors, and that news resonates well with investors, whether they are local or foreign. So that is the messaging. So there was a deliberate action for Namibia to go out there through various platforms, whether it is the NIPDB, whether it's the President's Office, whether it's the Green Hydrogen Office, and so forth. But then, of course, when you come to areas, when you discover something like oil and gas, it becomes a message on itself.
Yeah.
So, yes, it started at a place where we were also approached by many investors that are talking about hydrogen and green hydrogen. And the world was moving towards decarbonization. And I think we, as a country, we just took the right step in making sure that, yes, as a country, we were identified as one of the few countries that can produce hydrogen at a competitive rate. And therefore, we stood up and set our policy, which takes me to really, beside the narratives, the second point is about government's organization. How are you organize yourself as government? And are you forming partnerships with the relevant people? So whether it is the partnership between Namibia and the EU, or between Namibia and other African countries, or between Namibia and Japan and others, that forming of those strategic partnerships becomes very important. The way you organize yourself on the ground becomes very important.
Yes.
Do you have institutions that are able to welcome investors? Do you have institutions that are able to make decisions and to deliver? So if we see, especially in the hydrocarbons, one thing that happened is really the delivery and the support of Home Affairs in approving work visas that were required, because they said that if in the oil and gas industry, if for one day you cannot do work, it costs about $100,000 just if the drilling is not happening. And they need different type of skills at different times throughout the drilling campaign. And therefore you need kind of visas of short-term people, because you only need these skills for a period of 3 months, and then it goes, then you need another skills. So your responsiveness in permitting becomes very, very important. So that are some of the factors that helped us as a country to make sure that we attract investment.
One of the concerns of many Namibians is the sustainability of this investment in the long term, especially when it comes to oil and gas, because when it comes to oil and gas, this have some finite kind of life span. So how much is this now, from your understanding, how much of this, you know, FDI is actually directly the number that we have kind of mentioned. How much of this actually tied to oil and gas discovery, given what some of the of this concern in terms of how sustainable are this investment in the long term?
So the concerns are very valid.
Yeah.
And the concern is what we all have. And I think if one looks at the one of the reasons of establishing NIPDB, you know, when NIPDB was established, nobody knew that we'd be discovering oil. So we were established to really promote Namibia's diversification strategy.
Yeah.
And it comes from the fact that our economy is purely, it was purely driven by a lot of extractive sector.
Yeah.
It was driven by government spending. And then it was driven by what we call non-tradables, which is a lot of wholesale trade and so on. And that continues to be the case today. Therefore, the drive of NIPDB was, let us try to make sure that we diversify this economy by bringing in other sectors. So today we have got about 10 sectors that we are driving. And we want to make sure that, yes, while we celebrate the increased investment in the hydrocarbons, we do not spend 20% of our time on that. We spend our 90%, maybe 80 to 90% of our time in the other sectors that we need to drive. So coming back to your questions on the figures. So if you look at the total of what we have, about 114 billion. So let's say about 50% in total of that one comes from oil exploration. But if you look as the years went by, so if you can look, for example, in 2021, oil was about 9.5 billion, while the rest was about 2.8 billion. But when you move to 2022, oil is 11.6 billion. And the others is 5.7 billion. When you come to 2023, oil is 23.3 billion.
Yeah.
The others is 24.9 billion. So the others starts to be a little bit more than oil. And when we came to 2024, oil was 12.4 billion, while other sectors is 24.6 billion. So we are being deliberate about bringing in others. But what we need to look at it is, for now, oil will continue to play a big share. And in any particular year, that investment may even go up to 80%. What is important is, are the others increasing? So their share might not necessarily be 50%, but is the value of that, the nominal value of the other sectors, is it increasing? That is what we are going to drive, because we know, you know, you might have heard of a Dutch disease. In any country, when there's oil takes over. But then you need to make sure that when it takes over, you have to be deliberate that the others do not suffer and are not completely ignored. So we have to do that, and I think that is the strategy that we are employing in having the other sectors in play as well.
So which other sectors have, maybe if you can mention some, which other sectors that have attracted most FDI, and why do you think they are gaining traction?
So, of course, our traditional mining sector continue to attract FDI. So, and why mining sector is attracting FDI? You remember around 2015, there was decrease in commodity prices globally, and they started picking up. And we can talk specifically about something like uranium. So then uranium was going down, but now as we move towards energy transition, something like uranium is becoming more and more also in demand, because it's seen as a source of clean energy. And therefore, we are seeing increased investment in uranium. You can see that there was a mine like Langer Heinrich that was in care and maintenance for some years, and that has been, it has been revived, and other mines are coming. And then, of course, you may have heard about other mines such as the gold, when it comes to Osino Gold. And then also other minerals such as copper are becoming in demand, and therefore that trend is coming through. Yes, the other ones are wholesale and retail trade. That is also a sector that is growing. And that, of course, is not necessarily the one that is creating, let's say, sustainable jobs in the future, because you need other sectors to support it. However, that is a sector that indicates that our affordability and our spending as a nation is increasing. Because if we are purchasing more from wholesale and retail trade, it means that we have got a bit more in our pocket to spend. It's one of the good indicators. But then, of course, financial services, which is actually a good sector, is a sector that is picking up. So, and financial services, and then, of course, manufacturing, there has been something of an increase. We know that after COVID, jobs in manufacturing decreased, but we are seeing that there is increase. And then, so those are from a kind of a global level. But we are seeing other smaller kind of investments which have not yet translated into the big numbers, like you have talked about agriculture, the berries at Divundu. We talked about something like Cup Blue and High Iron. And those investments, we want investment in innovation. So those are investments in innovation. So Cup Blue, it's something that we did not have before. Something called Nopal, it's cactus farming. High Iron, it's about green iron that is the first of its kind in the world. So we are seeing those ones, and we are seeing that they are building a good platform for our future, because those are the upcoming industries. And the other thing that they are doing is, previously, because we had more agriculture, tourism, and so on, we were not able to create jobs for our young engineers who are graduating, our young marine biologists and others. So now we have got investments that are able to create jobs for specialized qualifications that UNAM and NUST are graduating, which we were not able to do in the past.
So in compare your focus, in especially for your responsibility, would you say also you focus on domestic direct investment as well? And how do you compare, you know, the inflow, of course the local ones, I mean the domestic is here, it just in terms of which one, why, this is my assumption anyway, why there aren't so much domestic investment as compared to foreign investment?
Yes, so it's a very, very good question and a very valid question. So the first thing is, from let's look at a report perspective. It is easy to get reports about foreign direct investment because they are all tracked through the Bank of Namibia. So every money that comes into investment, whether it's portfolio or foreign direct and so on, goes through the Bank of Namibia, and therefore that data is easy to get. Unfortunately, it's not the same with local investment. So domestic investment don't have a place where they are tracked. So even if we are stimulating it, we are struggling to record and account for that domestic investment. But yes, we are seeing still increased investment by local Namibians. So if you look at whether it is the Namib Mills of this world, they continue to grow, whether it's Otava and List, who, when you know, they sold the Namibia breweries, and all the money they got from there, they are now investing in energy, tourism, agriculture, and new other sectors which are actually away from your extractive sectors. Whether it's the likes of France Indongo Group, you see that they are investing a lot across various sectors. And I think if you see some of that investment in wholesale trade. So what happens, the other thing that you need to look at is when you bring in foreign direct investment, this is money. And that money does not necessarily mean it goes to foreign companies. It can be targeted at local companies. So, for example, if you and I, we come up with a project and we say, okay, we want to produce something and we need money. Sometimes that money does not necessarily come from Namibia, so we can go internationally, get somebody who's got money, and then invest. So if you see, for example, and now maybe let me tell you a combination of a good project. This one is a foreign project, which is the berries, but it's got a combination of foreign money, but there's also money there from GIPF. And then there's another berries which is called the mashari. That was the first berries in Namibia. And they exported, they started exporting long time ago. Mashare is a Namibian investment that was started with GIPF money. And they also brought in some foreign money. So if you compare the two berries project, one was initiated by Namibians, and Namibian investment with GIPF money, and they brought in some foreign money to support. The other one was brought in by non-Namibians with foreign money, but they brought in Namibian capital. And therefore, it is, of course, important to make sure that our Namibian capital goes into those investments so that when they start earning returns, those returns do not all flow out of the country. They also flow into the country. They also remain in the country, which takes us maybe to something we call reinvestment. One thing we are trying to drive also with foreign investment. So if you've got a foreign investor who is invested in Namibia, so for example, let's say you can talk again about whether it is Cap Blue or the berries and so on. You say you want them to reinvest or high iron. How do you get them to reinvest? Their project today is phase one, which is only using, let's say, 100 million Namibian dollars. Now, when they get the returns, they attract more investment and they increase their investment in that project so that it grows further instead of taking out their return out of Namibia. Alternatively, they can also take that money and put it into a new project because they think and they believe that there is more return in Namibia. So they say, do you have other assets where we can invest?
Yeah. So the other thing is that the report mentioned a push toward labor-intensive sectors, sectors like tourism, agribusinesses, and digital technologies. What are the biggest barriers to attracting investment in this area?
So the cost of doing business. So let me just mention the first one. It's the cost of doing business. So let me tell you the difference between capital intensive or rather let's say a resource-based investment and others. So when you have got oil and gas and when you got mining, it doesn't matter really many things. The company, because they are looking for that mineral and you are the one who has it, they will come to your country. However, when you look at other things, let's look at first just agriculture.
Yeah.
Agriculture, we know that Namibia is not the country, in Africa that has got the most arable land. Most of our land is a desert. And therefore, to attract agriculture, yes, you are competing with countries that have got much more arable land.
Yeah.
Then you say, okay, where do we have arable land? If you go to a place like the Orange River, there is arable land and there's water. And it's thriving. Why? Because the security of tenure on land and the permitting of getting land is simplified.
Yeah.
If you go to the countries, to the regions, and especially what sometimes hurts me is if you look at our unemployment rate, the countries in the regions in Namibia with the most kind of arable land and water have got the highest level of unemployment.
Yeah.
So you ask yourself why? The land permitting process is a problem because it's in communal land and therefore to get your security of tenure as an investor is a challenge. To get the community support is something else that you need to get. So the involvement of the people that are required to get you the land is a long, long process and it is complicated. That is one item. So on agriculture, you can look at that one of saying, we don't have a lot of arable land. Where we get arable land, the security of tenure is a challenge and the land permitting processes has got quite a number of dynamics, if I can put it that way, that need to be overcome, and therefore we need to coordinate well as a country. Then you go to something like tourism. Tourism is easy. I think tourism is doing well. We can attract more tourists, but of course you know that we have got the sweet spot also, which are the parks that do not allow anybody else to invest in the parks except NWR.
Yeah.
But NWR is probably not very well capitalized. So because it's not very well capitalized, it is not necessarily investing significantly in lodges that will attract. If you go to the likes of Botswana and Tanzania, you have got rooms that cost per night something like 20,000 Namibian dollars. And I'm sure we have got such in Namibia.
Yeah.
But if you go to NWR, they don't necessarily have those rooms. And but they have got the prime spot. So yeah. Those are, how do we work with NWR and the ministry to make sure that we are able to support NWR to invest more, to capitalize them with, yes, money, technical support and marketing support and so forth. That is the one thing. And then you go to manufacturing and all the others. All the others is about cost of doing business.
Yeah.
So because those ones, they don't need the beauty of your country. All they need is laws, yes. And we do have a good rule of law.
Mm-hmm.
But the policies that the cost of doing business in Namibia. So what is the cost of your electricity? The cost of input, yes, electricity, labor. Do you have available skills that is needed for that industries?
Yeah.
Do you have the labor that is needed for that? The cost of electricity affordable. Do you have, and that is then when they bring in incentives. So if the cost of doing business is about high, then government comes in and say, okay, let's give incentives for these sectors so that they can come and give our jobs to our people. And that is some of the conversation. So the policy gap is one of the challenges. I know it's a long answer, but I think that is really where the challenges are.
Yeah. And how is the NIPDB, you know, working to encourage now foreign investor into these areas?
So I think we have promoted well. We have listened to them. So if you hear normally people say we have got a pipeline of investment projects that are not moving significantly, is because I think the work with the investor, most of it has been done. The work that we are doing is now with our government.
Yeah.
The policy.
Mm.
So most of the work that we need to do to attract those investors, yes, we still need to speak to the right investors and so on, but we first need, we as a people and as a government at home, we need to look into our responsiveness. How fast do we respond to the queries of investors in terms of permitting? But also, how can we support investors with reduction in the cost of doing business? Mm-hmm. How do we work with making sure that we are able to provide affordable electricity, affordable IT costs? It's a big, big matter on that one, which is the IT cost. How comparable are we with the region? So if you look at it, for example, in energy, we've got stability in terms of energy, but our affordability is a challenge.
Yeah.
If you look at the cost of our internet and ICT-related services, it's relatively high. And if you compare our tax to the tax in the region, is relatively high. But we have been talking with government. That's why you have heard that, for example, there is a move to start reducing our tax rate. Namibia had an incentive, a law that was supporting manufacturing and export processing zone. That law was abolished in 2020. So from 2021 up to today, no company was able to get any form of incentive, and manufacturing will not come to your country without incentives.
Yeah.
It's just the challenge we have. And then now the ones that have got those benefits are losing them at the end of this year. So again, that's why we are working with the rest of government to see how do we respond by providing instruments that are needed to attract these investors.
And what have we learned then from past FDI initiatives like the Expo, the EPZ, you know, that was introduced in 1996?
It's a very good point. So what we have learned there is you cannot do one item and neglect the others.
Mm.
So the EPZ did not serve us well at all. And that is why it was abolished. Why did it not serve us well? It did not bring in taxes, so it was completely like tax-free.
Mm.
But at the same time, it did not lead to a growth in the economy. Why? If other policies are not in place, if the marketing and the promotion is not in place, if there is not a one-stop center to provide services to investors, and if the government is not working with investors to find international market for their product, and how do you find international market? If we want to export some products to certain countries, there are protocols that must be agreed with those countries. And those protocols need to be agreed by government before private sector can access them. So we said tax free, but then many other things that are supposed to support that growth didn't happen.
Yeah.
And therefore we did not do, or we did not get that benefit. And that's why now what we're doing is you kind of have to have the comprehensive response. So it's about to understand which investor am I attracting? This one. What do they need? So having a conversation, and that's something that we are doing now. Government has started doing, and it is being championed driven by NIPDB.
Yeah.
It's something we call the productivity task forces. So productivity task force is where we come together and we say we are in the beef value chain. We are starting one now for automotive manufacturing.
Yeah.
So we will bring together all the people that are in that value chain from the private sector and the relevant government institutions that are supposed to enable them. And then we have a conversation and we say, okay, what can we do to increase the productivity in this sector? So if we want to produce more, manufacture vehicle components, we were manufacturing some vehicle components. There was a company called Namibia Present Tools. It was producing components for BMW and others.
Yeah.
When we removed the incentives, unfortunately, that company had to close down. So we need to have conversation with people that were operating that company and said, what can we do to collaborate and for government to enable you? Then they tell government what they need. And then government, of course, will say, no, this one you cannot get. And the request, they are not requests of saying, oh, government, you must give us incentives. No, the request, they say, okay, government, the borders, they need to be open 24 hours.
Yeah.
Because we cannot keep trucks that are waiting there for long. Our agricultural products will not take it. Okay, government, at the port, we need to be more efficient. If it takes long for things to get in or to be processed, it kills business. So it's conversations like those ones. Government, the cost of electricity is not right. How can we work together? Government, we need access to the Chinese market. Can you please agree protocols with China? So it's things like that we have seen coming out of productivity task force. Then they get assigned to the relevant ministries, and then NIPDB follows up with those ministries of saying, what are we doing? So we are really here to help government to make sure that the private sector is aligned with government's development agenda, and that the private sector understand what is government's development agenda, how do we support them, and government understands what do we need to do for the private sector to enable them to be productive. So we are here to really make sure that what everything that we are doing, and the other thing maybe I can touch on is investment, like you said, this large investment come in, how do they benefit the person on the ground? So if you see, number one, you look at oil and gas, for example. Now we need the skills. So somebody was saying, some of this money is almost like money that is virtual. Why? Because it never hits our bank statement or our bank account. So what happens? Why is it not hitting our bank account?
Yeah.
Because if we don't have the skills and the companies that are needed to provide services, then it will never hit our bank account. So what does NIPDB do? We engage the Total Energies, the Shell, and the Halliburton of this world and say, okay, which services are you requiring? Which goods are you requiring? Then we work with them. Okay, this is what you require. Okay, who are you buying them from currently? From whoever? Then we do a few things. One, either to attract that investor to Namibia so that whoever they are buying from set up in Namibia so that they can at least employ Namibians.
Yeah.
In the meanwhile, also, to look at, for example, we are working with our small businesses, and that's why we have the MSME division. And we say, okay, the businesses that we have in Namibia, how can they be supported by government to start setting up so that they can provide some of these services? Of course, in Angola, they can do more. They have been doing this for many years.
Yeah.
But in Namibia, we need to start somewhere. And that's why, for example, the oil industry did something which they call almost like the baseline study that indicates what kind of skills do we have currently in Namibia, which ones are required by the oil and gas, how do we bridge the gap? And that's why one of the departments that we're having at NIPDB is the skills department that is then taking this message to government and saying, look, the oil and gas said they need these skills. This is the gap. How can we work with you and the Ministry of Education and various universities to make sure that we start making these skills available? So we need to make sure that that is number one. We localize those skills. We localize those industries.
Yeah.
But then the other thing that we do need to do, in making sure that those investments really become local is I was saying we need to direct investment. We need to tell investment where it must go. Currently, we are reactive.
Yeah.
Investors who are foreign investors, they come to us and say, I want to do this in Namibia, and we support them. But I'm excited about the new government and their implementation. So the Swapo Party Manifesto Implementation Plan, it's very clear, and it will help and support NIPDB in what they're doing. Because they say, we want agriculture, and guess what? We are making land available. We want this one, and guess what? We are making this available.
Yeah.
So previously, it was challenging for us. Because there was nothing like that one. So the government was not really working to enable investment by making land available, by making money available, by making this available, and therefore the industry get taken up by foreigners instead of Namibians. So with the implementation plan, it will support us in driving what we need to drive.
Yeah. So when you look at this report, it's the first the FDI kind of report. So what role does now transparency and data-driven policymaking play in Namibia's FDI strategy?
I'm not so sure I understand the question, because you said transparency and data-driven play in. Maybe you can explain it a little bit.
You know, what I mean is that, you know, does this actually help the government with the kind of the report like this?
Yes.
Does it help the government in any way, in terms of the information that they get? Is that somehow helpful? Does that drive more, how would I put it?
Okay. I think I get it.
Okay.
No, I get it.
Yeah.
I get it. So it's like, how can we, is this report just information?
Oh, yeah.
Or can we use it to drive better decision making?
Exactly.
It's a very, very good question, because data is important and it's critical. And many times we make we actually made decisions that are not data driven. So what we get from here is yes to say, and especially when we compare, so this report should go further, especially from our side, and we say, okay, this is what we are doing. But if you look at it, we now need to compare to other countries. So how does this compare to the next country? So if Rwanda is able to attract ICT, investment and financial services investment and so on, and in our own kind of FDI data, it is barely 10 million, while in theirs it is 100 billion. What are they doing that we are not doing? How can we learn from them? So this data helps us to look at, yes, where is FDI going? Why is it going there? How can we direct it to other industries? And then, for example, now when I go in, for example, to government and say, government, yes, we need to discuss incentives. And they ask, why? Because you can see our manufacturing sector is stagnant. So, because our manufacturing sector is stagnant, it's not growing well, it means it will remain here until we do something about it. And now this data is no longer about Nangula saying it's not. It's about having data that is proving to somebody that this is what is happening. So if you look at somewhere like electricity, so electricity is an enabler, but the investment into electricity is very little, or even just the what we call FDI stock and the employment in electricity. And then you look at, for example, our health sector. Employment in the health sector for companies that we say are FDI recipient, it's very, very little. So does this mean that our health sector is 100% cutted by local investment and there's no problem? Or should we look at health sector and see what can we do more in the health sector to attract foreign direct investment into the health sector? How do we compare to others, and so forth?
Yeah. Well, while you're on that, so how does Namibia actually compare to other African nations in attracting and retaining foreign investment?
No, so in the report we have got a section, there's a, it kind of tells us first, the first part tells us the global trend,
yeah,
and the second one is Africa trend. Of course, because of the hydrocarbons, we are kind of shooting out the light.
Yeah.
But we, so if you look at, for example, we say, the top FDI destination for 2023, Namibia was about number 7, I believe.
Mm.
And the countries that are above us are the Egypt, South Africa, so it is large economy. So compared to our peers, we have done very, very well.
Yeah.
And when it comes to what we call FDI as a percentage of GDP, we are number 1 in Africa. We are at number 19%, while Mozambique is at 12.2%.
Wow.
Senegal is at 8.5%. Uganda is 5.9%. Everybody else is below 3%.
Yeah, these are some of information that, you know, our people don't hear.
Yes.
Yeah.
And the point is, we are not the only country in Africa that has got hydrocarbons.
Mm, mm.
So it means that even though we are saying that it's only about hydrocarbons, other countries have got hydrocarbons, but they were not able to attract as much as we have. Is it because we are new? Yes, other countries are new as well. So it does mean that there is something that is not about, oh, it's just oil and gas.
Yeah.
So whether again it is our service for that industry, whether it is our permitting for that industry and so forth, it kind of means that we are doing something to support that industry to grow and develop, and we need to keep it up and do even better in terms of servicing it, but definitely with a focus of making sure that we are supporting others. And what we have, for example, recently at NIPDB, we employed who we call the sector specialist.
Yeah.
And those sector specialists, because we want them to focus on driving these sectors. So we have got one person who is looking at the whole total of energy, including oil and gas and so on, which is big.
Mm.
And we have got about 5 others who are looking at the other sectors, like one for agriculture, one for manufacturing, one for ICT and financial services and so on, one for tourism and so forth, and a creative culture. So you can see that we, as much as energy is big, from our side, we have put one person there.
Yeah.
And we are focusing on the other sectors.
So
also,
we as a media, if we need update in those areas, can we reach these people in your company?
Definitely, anytime. So you can, of course, drop me an email and then I will link you to the right people.
All right. Now, What are the Namibians' FDI targets for the next 3 to 5 years, and which sectors are expected to lead the way?
That is a very good one. So what we were doing when we did what we call our strategy for the 5 years, we were looking at very, very ambitious target. And yes, some of those ambition targets, we say, for example, we want to generate something of 300 billion worth of what we call investment leads are going up to 2030. And especially we kind of go down and say how much of that percentage should be out of energy. So, and then we say, for example, we want to realize, we say something like to realize national cumulative investment of about really 500 billion, in the next 5 years. So those are some of the targets that we have. They are very, very huge numbers. But again, if you say 500 billion in years, there's a big portion that will come from energy, there's a lot, big portion that will come from mining, but we have cascaded it down to the various other sectors. So what we are saying now, we want to do actually, and why we have created sector specialists, we said that of course the sectors are owned by the ministers.
Mm.
So what we want to do is we take our sector specialists, work with the ministers and say, okay, we are with the Minister of Agriculture, for example. We need to have that conversation with the Minister of Agriculture and say, how do we put together a sector investment strategy which then we will set out for agriculture and say, in agriculture, we want agriculture to contribute so much by to GDP and so much to employment.
Mm.
So that is what we want to work with the various ministries, set targets together with them. So we are just allowing them, especially its new ministers, we are allowing them to set to settle down. So once they have settled down, our plan is that we have started to work on is set. Sit with them because they own their sectors and said, we need that particular sector. Is it performing or underperforming? How much can it contribute? We want to create 500 billion, attract 500 billion. We think your sector can do so much. Is that something we can work on? Because like I say, in the end, we don't own the sectors, the ministers.
Mevanja, just quickly, there will be a quick commercial coming up and we will actually then conclude.
Okay.
Do you urgently need cash and happen to own a car? Creditors delaying and contractors need to be paid? When life throws you a rainy day, AutoCash got your back. Park your car and get up to 45% of its value within 45 minutes. No payslip, no bank statement, just the car. Moolah when you need it.
Easy money.
Call us today on 061-400-676. That is 061-400-676. AutoCash, it's that simple.
All right, welcome back. Yeah, May, why don't you just finish the point you were making?
Yep.
Mm.
No. So I think what I was making is a point of saying, of course, the ministers own their sectors.
Yeah.
And we cannot work outside of what the ministers want to see and what they want to drive. And they need to make sure that they are the ones that are setting enabling policies and so on. So we will stand guided by the ministers. But of course, whereas we are the ones that are specialists, if you can put there for investment.
Yeah.
So the Swapa Party manifesto is clear as to what they want to do in those sectors.
Mm.
But of course, you need now to put it together and make sure you understand, okay, how much of this is attracting foreign direct investment? And yes, this is what government is thinking about. What can we get from the private sector? So that's why we are thinking about something we call the Namibia Public Private Forum that was already approved by cabinet. We will bring together the private sector and the public sector for us to sit and see how do we set objectives together.
Mm.
And we are already working in putting sectoral working committees that will look at the government's plans, and then for the private sector to see how can they make sure they support government's development agenda going forward. And maybe one of the last points that I can make, as of course I know that our time is up, is the point of saying, what do we need, what can we do to get more out of FDI?
Yeah.
That is the question that's important. And mm-hmm. I think I said a few things. Number one, we need to proactively direct investment where they should go.
Mm.
And I think we have started there. So whether it is in terms of sector or whether it is in terms of regions, we need to be very deliberate that investment don't just end up in Windhoek and Wafish Bay and Lüderitz. They need to go to the rest of Namibia.
Mm.
And therefore, we need to think about which project do we then, if investors are not proactively coming to us for those regions, how can we create investment projects in those regions? And that means we need the regional leadership, the sectoral leaders to be on board with us. The other one is, of course, like I said, it must be aligned. We need to drive it to be aligned to the national development agenda.
Yeah.
And then we need to inculcate a culture of internship and apprenticeship. Otherwise, we will continue to allow imports to imported skills. Of course, most of the people employed are local Namibians. Of course, we have got good laws at home affairs that does not just bring in foreigners. So even if we say this is FDI, it's not foreigners that are employed there, it's Namibians.
Yeah.
But we need to employ more Namibians. But for us to do that, we need to help them with experience. We need to build and make sure that we incorporate local businesses and MSMEs into the value chain of investment. So if they say a gold mine like Osino, how do we make sure that we start having them to buy more local and import less? And we are working with, for example, the mining industry. Last year we launched something we call the input database, understanding what are the various inputs into the mining industry, and how can we get Namibians to set up businesses there. So on our website, you will see business ideas that we have started to put down on NIPDB business to tell Namibian businesses, here are some of the things that are needed in Namibia, so here are some of the business ideas.
Yeah.
So it's available on our website. And then I've talked about incentives. We need to invest more in research and development so that we can also initiate our own projects, because to start a project, you need significant research and development. And then, of course, infrastructure and local supply chain development. And then we do need to attract what we call competencies or critical cost, key skills, even if it is foreigners, because sometimes you attract that one skill and it is then able to provide opportunity for employment for five others.
Yeah.
So we need to be deliberate as to not just having people apply because they enter our door. No, we need to understand who is missing in this ecosystem.
Yeah.
And how then do we attract those skills and kind of give them a support which is different from others. When we say other people, come in, you have got a 2-year work permit and you must go. For this critical component, we need to look at them differently. So come in, if you are going to able us to train Namibians and every year you churn out two or three, then you can stay here for as long as you are training and developing Namibians, things like that.
So, and finally, what would you say to ordinary Namibians who feel really disconnected from this investment and wonder how they benefit their lives?
So what I can say is sometimes you feel disconnected, but we are all connected to investment. So how are we connected? So the simple thing is this one. Yes, maybe you have a job and you get it. So we are saying that FDI recipient companies currently employ about more than 60,000 Namibians.
Yeah.
We say that for each and every one of that one, normally studies have shown in Namibia, for each one FDI job, about they will create an indirect 2.5 job or induce 2.5 job. So the jobs in Namibia that are supported by FDI recipients, they are close to 220,000.
Yeah.
So which means even if you are not working for some of these companies, if they leave Namibia, your job may be impacted. That is number one. Number two, we have seen that about 2019 or from 2015, Namibia went through a fiscal consolidation because our government did not have a lot of money. We are now seeing that government has got more money now than we did then. So, of course, a few things have happened. NAMRA is doing a brilliant job of collecting revenue, but NAMRA will not collect revenue where there are no businesses to pay revenue.
Yeah.
So it just means that the ability of Namibians to pay tax has also increased.
Yeah.
And if and you can see that whether it is FDI companies, how much taxes they pay and so on. So the tax that we have in government, so how does it impact you? When government has got high tax, they are able to offer free tertiary education. They are able to offer free primary education. They are able to go and say, at our healthcare, we will now recruit 20,000 more nurses. And now saying, okay, you know what we will do? All Namibians that are working, we are now going to cut your taxes. That happened last year. So our taxes were all reduced. And the list goes on. So all these things flow through to treasury. When we don't have investors, the economy does not grow. When it does not grow, we don't pay taxes. When we don't pay taxes, everything else suffers. So every one of us are impacted in one way or another. But yes, I do know that there is somebody who is not having a job today. And that person is saying, you can talk all your things, I don't have a job. And I promise you, this is a personal thing, if there's anything that keeps me awake at night, is the high level of unemployment in Namibia. And it does not only keep me awake at night, it pushes me every day. I wake up to see, I was explaining to my father yesterday, he said, what do you do? I said, okay, let me put it in simple. And I was actually explaining to him in my vernacular, in Oshambo language.
Yeah.
I said, what I'm doing, you were a business person, right? Right? Yes. And you employed a number of people. Yes. What I do is to grow more businesses in Namibia so that they can employ more people.
Yeah.
Government cannot employ everybody. So every day I'm saying, how do I bring one more business, whether it is a Namibian business, whether it is a foreign business, that will just employ most of our people. And how do I make sure that we...
Are you still there?
For the first time in the north of Namibia, how that is what is making me wake up every day to push, and hopefully in my lifetime, by God's grace, one day we will say the unemployment rate of Namibia is below 10%.
No, thank you very much. Any last words? Maybe something that I haven't asked you that you would like to add to our conversations? Quickly?
No, I think we have spoken about everything.
Yeah.
Thank you again for the opportunity. And yes, I do believe we need to reach out to our people and make sure that they're updated as to what we are doing and what is happening in the ecosystem.
Yeah.
But normally I tell people, for me, it's, I like to normally, if I was at a party, like normally my father will have a party at home.
Yeah.
I'm the person that makes sure that there is food, it's cooked, I coordinate, I do the logistics, I make sure that there is enough to serve everybody, and then I go to bed when they are eating. So I want to make sure that hopefully I am able to work to find the food for Namibians,
yeah,
and then I can mind my own business when everybody is celebrating and enjoying the food that is on the table. But we need to work hard to make sure that there is food on the table.
Exactly. With a little bit effort, whatever your effort that you're contributing, definitely to make a difference. And thank you for making sure, for actually availing yourself to come through this morning and talk to our listeners and actually, you know, unpack the FDI report for us and for our listeners as well. Thank you for coming through.
It's a pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Thank you.
Bye.
All right. That was Nangula Wanja, the chief executive officer of the NIPDB. And when we come back, we will invite you to come through and have your reaction.
Your preconceptions of technology. Explore the apps that are redefining the future. Out with the old and in with the new. From carrying physical hard copy hymn books to the world of digital hymn book versions. See the bold new expressions of the Imba app. Feel like you're part of something bigger. Experience the digital hymn book in the palm of your hands. Behold, the new and improved Imba that brings together various hymn books under one app. Here to unite a nation and spread the gospel. Some of the featured hymn books on Imba app are The Elsie Nehangano, The Osherero Omaimburiro, The Catholics Imane Kakarunga, The Africans Sing for Tierra, and many more. Contact us today if you'd like for your church hymn book to be added onto the list of Imba hymn books. 081-23-58-063. You can also email us at digital@omalaiti.com. Download and discover Imba today. You can find it on the App Store as well as the Google Play Store.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the I.
So very good morning to you. If you just joining us, we just concluded a conversation with Mrs. Nangula Wanja, the CEO of the Namibia Investment Promotion and Development Board. So yeah, we were looking at, you know, last week, the Namibia the what the Bank of Namibia and the NIPDB have actually launched or unveiled, you know, the first FDI report. And we were kind of like just unpacking that and also looking at the FDI in Namibia, and also looking at also specifically that this monies that comes in from, you know, FDI, does it translate into local, as we call, local paycheck? Does it really benefit our local Namibians, and the local people? So we have examples of some of those projects, like the Divundu one, the Berry, Namibia Berries in Divundu, which actually exporting the fruit globally already. It also has created hundreds of jobs to local people. So yeah, and hopefully we hope that all other projects, either clean energy projects and other projects that are in the pipeline, will probably do the same thing. So what is your reaction? You may come through at our telephone number now is 08-333-66091. 08-333-66091. So you're most welcome to come through and have your reaction, either to the discussions or also to your own contributions on foreign direct investment project in Namibia. So what is your reactions? And if you have read the report, what do you say about the report? So what is your reaction to the report? So our telephone number again, 08-333-66091. So you're most welcome to come through and have your comments or your opinion on the subject that we are discussing this morning. Yeah, quite interesting, but a very interesting conversation that we had. So looking at when we talk about, you know, the 70% of incoming FT, which is more concentrated on capital intensive project, which are like oil and gas, mining and heavy industries. So, and which means that some of these, you know, the industries don't really pick up much of employment, like sectors like tourism, you know, agribusiness, manufacturing. So these are the ones that probably, you know, take up much of a number of employment, large number of employment, so compared to the capital intensive projects. So yeah, and sometimes what is it because of sometimes it's because of the skill that required in those sectors Namibia might not have. And that's why you end up actually having more, you know, expatriate actually being employed in those projects rather than Namibians. So yeah, and yeah, so do come through. Our telephone number again, 08-333-66091. 08-333-66091. I think the other thing also, probably mentions also maybe one thing that we need to pay attention to is the uneven development. Could uneven development might be, you know, where you have, you know, Windhoek, Wavish Bay, Lodris, where mostly, you know, the most big investment, you know, are clustered around, you know, coastal hubs or mineral rich regions. So while if you take other regions like maybe Omaheke, Kavango and Zambezi, they see little actions. They see little of action in terms of projects and things like that. So town beyond Windhoek and Walvis Bay so often lack that proper infrastructure or power or skills. So, and that it doesn't really attract, you know, a new project in those areas. So I think, there's one thing that's, you know, that striking a balance in terms of, you know, of making sure that certain regions are not actually left behind. And actually the impact of that, you know, if we looked at, more profound, I think the impact of that would be, that's why we have urban migrations. Job seekers now flood into cities, chasing scarce opportunities. So what does then that cause, start causing problems? Causing problems, you have inflating housing cost, and then you have also, you are straining also the water system. You know, you have so many people that the water system doesn't be able to supply to number of residents that are there. You know, then you have health system also strained, and you have education services. So those are some of the issues. And also, without now local investment in terms of some of these regions, you know, farming communities, they miss out on agro processing plants or maybe tourism that could add value and incomes locally. So those are some of I think some of the issues that that comes our discussion. And the other thing is that the FDI dollars often fund raw material extraction with most processing actually done not in the country but done outside, done abroad. So if we have iron ore, it's mined here and are shipped elsewhere for refining, for example. And you could have also crude oil, which may leave Namibia for processing abroad. So, and that would then definitely have impact also on what we're talking about. So have that will have also impact on, so because every ton of iron ore or a barrel of oil refined here, it could then support what she was actually referring to, reinvesting that into maybe factories, in creating maybe technical jobs and also generating tax revenues. So, yeah, so all that. And if that is actually processed, if that process being processed outside, if that happens overseas, then there isn't that benefit. All right. So, yeah. And, the skill as well, you know, when now the refining of these resources is outside. So what happened to our local engineers? What happened to our chemistry? What happened to our technicians? So they also lose out on hands-on experience that come with down, streaming facilities. So limiting Namibia long-term industrial competitiveness as well, because we are not developing skills within Namibia. So, yeah, those are some of the, I think, the issues that that are also picked up. So you're most welcome to react to our discussion or your own opinion of foreign direct investment. So our telephone number is 0833-66091, 0833-66091. You're most welcome to come through and have your say or your opinion or whatever you think, your contribution to the topic as well.
Omudiha utekirwa kaguna I matina omjo chikao shafasa na nana longeshifa ya ishiwike moshiwana iye moyao otaingongotisa mwene anageshifa ya Namibia ombitombwa nawa olonjika. Seitha nena omayakulo nilanditomwa yoye, yongeshefa yoye okupitira mo Eagle FM Media House. Ngoe tuende tuimemeha uuka kombanga nena. Kara omkwashi pareki uimwe po yomo programa zetu. Moambo lengera selma, onaraje tatu imwe. Datu ndatu heari jamano tano, oniyaji. Eagle FM, so high.
Listen to Eagle FM in Ludritz at 91.2 FM. Listen to Eagle FM in Omthea at 90.5. Listen to Eagle FM in Mariental at 101.2. Listen to Eagle FM in Okahanja at 104. Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear or favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person who does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to
be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past, and it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM,
so welcome back, and this is Unpacking the Day with me, Mike Shoveli. So our time has about 10 minutes past the hour of 9, and we go up to 9:30. We still have about 20 minutes before I say tata for the day. And and you're most welcome to come through, and we covered a couple of stuff, you know, sometime from the morning, early morning scoop, if there are certain things also that you probably want to pick up and comment on it. Sure, you're most welcome. We have also the F&B segment. So if there are issues there as well that you would like to, you know, pick up and share and add your contribution, so you're most welcome to do that. So, all right. So what else? Come in through anytime. You're most welcome to come through anytime. And if you want to contribute to some of those issues that you might have had earlier in the morning or during our conversation with Mrs. Wanja. So please do come through. And also, we had also a short segment there of an F&B segment. So if anything, questions or anything that you want to comment on those, you're most welcome to do so. Our telephone number, 0833-66091. All right. While I'm waiting for you, there's another hot topic that got, this industry, the industry of that industry expert and policymakers in a bit of a tangle. So is the Starlink, you know, the Starlink, the satellite internet services backed by Elon Musk. So where Namibia should be, where Namibia actually should bend its rules, we should actually bend our rules to let Starlink in on a 100% a foreign ownership model. All right. So what do you think about that? So now here's the background. The background is that just under a year ago, the US based satellite internet company applied to operate here with full ownership, with full ownership. So well above the, you know, in Namibia, so well above the 49% cap set by our Communication Act. So since then, the ball has been in the court of the Minister of ICT, who has the power actually to grant the exception to that local ownership rule. Now, the decision hasn't landed yet. So leaving now Starlink in regulatory limbo, and that also has sparked a fierce debate over who really stands to gain in this deal. So what do you think? Who is really stand to gain on this deal? So one issue, let's look at a couple of issues on this. In this, it's an article in one of a daily newspaper. So one, when you look at what Starlink is all about, it's a satellite internet promises. This actually promises to reach places where our fiber cables and mobile towers simply can't go affordably, if you like. So this would actually bridge that. For community, for example, in Kunene or Zambezi, you know, fast, more reliable internet could mean better access to online education. You know, the minister of health is talking about, you know, digitalizing the health service, you know, telemedicines and market information for farmers, you know, and in short, it could be a transformative for rural livelihood. So that could be a game changer, really. So, yeah. So we could have the impact would be really in terms of when you think in terms of education or think in terms of health. So a student in remote schools, you know, could tap into digital classrooms, you know, and while clinics, you know, could also consult. You imagine you are in the, you know, in some way in Divundu. Is it Divundu? Yeah. Not in Divundu, that's not further enough. You know, Mega, you know, where a clinic could, you know, you could consult a specialist in a real time, yeah, where there is no that download. Even though we, being in Oshakati, in Ondangwa, Ngudiva, you spend time waiting. You can wait for 2 or 3 minutes, something to actually download. And imagine now, what this Starlink is about, you know, at quick, you know, quick, broadcasting, you know, is that the word, you know? So it's very fast. Okay. And, can you imagine that now? As I said, so now in terms of when think of the, our farmers or in terms of economic opportunity or artisans, you know, they can connect with buyers beyond, you know, beyond their immediate region. I know for sometimes it's very, very frustrating having internet that is not reliable, you know, and it happens sometimes, you know, I may not be at home or sometimes I just want to watch something. Let's say, for example, I'm in an area where I can't go somewhere and just need to watch maybe football on my phone and might tell you, oh, you might not even be able to do that. It's just, you know, loading and loading until you get frustrated. For me, what happened to 5G? And, if this Starlink would give us that, I'm in, honestly. Yeah. So that's one issue looking at that, but you're also looking at on the other side. Okay. Now our laws requires Namibian ownership in telecom to foster local expertise. So, and keep profit circulating here and ensure that Namibia hold seat at the decision making table, you know? So that's the law. You know, if you grant now Starlink a full takeover, it risks sidelining homegrown firms and also the talent that could actually benefit from this. Plus, when profit flow overseas, like what we were talking earlier on, there is a less capital viable locally for future tech ventures. So to reinvest. Now, probably the impact would be that, you know, without a mandatory local stakes, the Namibian, you know, expert like engineers, marketers or support staff would actually have a fewer roles in this if it's a full takeover. So, and skill development, the foreign only ownership can limit on the job training and knowledge transfer that come with local partnership. So if you don't have that local partnership, so you may not really have much of on-job training and knowledge being transferred. So there is that tension between, you know, if you have to think that we need that quick, you know, internet rollout, and also a tension between now local empowerment is at heart of the debate. So now the other issue also, is also understanding that the satellite beam data. So across now, it is across the border. So it's not in Namibia. It raises question about where our citizens' information is stored and who can access it, you know. So if it's not actually in Namibia. So if Starlink, for example, servers sit somewhere abroad, so it could complicate efforts to protect personal data and really enforce privacy laws or respond quickly to cybersecurity incidents. So that become a problem. So now, and that would have also, it would have impact on a personal or business communication, and also I think on a national security. So in terms of business communication, could be subjected to foreign regulation, you know, and legal requests in terms of even accessing your data and all that. So, and there could be sensitive government or corporate data traveling through external server, and maybe harder or to now to monitor that and secure that, because you're not the server holder. So yeah, maybe there are those who say we have to come up with some kind of local data center. You know, you may give them actually 100% ownership, but then you have to come up with some kind of a local data centers or strict data localization rules that would address that concern. So if the government insists on them as a condition of entry, so to say, look, yes, you can have 100 ownership of that, but there would be that data localization rules to address some of those concerns. So, and by requiring that user data be stored and processed within Namibia's border, so authority would now retain clearer oversight of information flows, making it easier to enforce privacy laws and respond swiftly in the event of cyber attack or breach or something like that. So yeah, and such a requirement would also spur investment in our digital infrastructure, which means building or operating data center, create skilled jobs from network engineers. Are there network engineers? Yeah. So some kind of like network engineers, to even facility managers. So there will be some, you know, managers who are managing those facilities. So, yeah, and it's also, when you have that infrastructure, it lays a groundwork for local cloud services. So cloud service industries, rather than actually then relying entirely on offshore providers, and abroad providers, someone who's on the other side of the world. So, but on the flip side also is that the data localization mandate can also increase cost for service providers. Because by extension, consumers, they have to set up local facility, often carries higher capital and operation expenses. So these, you know, who carry those expenses? Definitely is consumers that carry those. By extension, the consumer actually carry these expenses, because of setting up local facilities would carry actually a higher capital and operating expenses. So the service might be more expensive compared to the one that actually provided directly from outside. So, yeah, those are some of the argument people looking at. So experts warn that bending rules. The other area is also that, well, if you bend your rules for one big player, it could open up a floodgate. So if you open a rule for one, you might open up a floodgate. If Starlink get a special deal, you will have other maybe finance, health or energy, multinationals, you know, might line up as well, demanding a similar exemption. So there's also those who said, you know, there must be a rule, a policy, that apply to everybody. So policymaker must ask, do we want one-off solutions? Maybe you will have the exemption because this is trying to address a certain problem, or do you insist on constant regulations that steer all investors, that, you know, guide all investors? So that's up for the policymakers to debate. So, so what it means also is that when you have this consistent enforcement, it also builds trust, because a person knows both, whether it's both domestic and domestic entrepreneurs or foreign investors, they believe, then they know what is the policy. Okay, it's very clear, you know what is expected. So, but when you have, you know, when it's just on one-on-one basis, then it becomes more complicated. So a stable, predictable framework encourage more a healthy balance between foreign capital and local development goals. So that has to be very, 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 very clear. So inconsistent decision, as I said, could leave Namibia chasing short-term fixes. We want this because, you know, we want to fix something at the expenses of clear investment roadmap. So if we have a clear investment roadmap that everybody is very, very, very clear about. So now, there are also those who argue that if you insist on strict local ownership, before any investment arrive, that could also scare. It could also scare off transformative, you know, transformative technologies and funds like Starlink. So, it's beg the question to look at the balance. Getting the balance right is I think is the key. Protect national interest, but don't send a message that rigid rules stop all opportunities, you know, trump all opportunities. So sometimes you have this game-changing investment, you know. Maybe selective flexibility might attract high impact project that wouldn't come otherwise. So if you say, you know, you have your, you know, own 100% ownership of your, of your investment. So then that would allow that company to come in who perhaps wouldn't actually come otherwise, wouldn't come in otherwise. So there are some investment that are really game changing. If you say so, there should be that. This is what some people saying, that there should be some selective flexibility, which might then attract higher impact projects, that wouldn't come otherwise. So, now that would depend now how, Namibia handles, Starlink. I think, of course, this is an international, you know, company. So that would echo in boardroom around the world. And we will see, we will be seen as, either open and pragmatic. Yeah, or overly protectionist. You know, the protectionist, what is now, you know, Trump is being, you know, accused of. So yeah, a standardized approach, such as time bound exception or performance based conditions, could uphold our standards while still actually inviting, you know, innovation and investment. Yeah. All right. So our time now, it's about 31 minutes. I didn't even look at the time. I'm sorry, Helmut. Yeah, our time is about 31 minutes past the hour of 9, and that brings us to the end of our of unpacking the day today. So please, let's do join us again tomorrow, the same time on the same station here on Eagle FM. But for now, stay tuned and keep listening to Eagle FM for other programs that are coming up. So Mind the Gap, that's coming up with Helmut. Goodbye from me. Until tomorrow.
Get social with us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn. Our handle is Eagle FM Namibia.
Eagle FM, the eye. Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person that does not have a capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Catatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Catatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past.
Mm.
And it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Did you know that in Namibia, over 1.4 million people use their mobile device to access the internet? So why not meet your current and potential customers where they already are? With over 600,000 cumulative users around the world, Between the Eagle FM and Imba mobile apps, Eagle Media House has the perfect digital platforms for you to advertise your business, upcoming events, weddings, vacancies, funerals, or any other announcement that you have on their digital billboards in their mobile applications. Put your ad on our digital billboards, and with one tap of the screen, lead users directly to an address of your choosing. For more information, contact Hende at 081-410-9077. That's 081-410-9077.
Olio mnangeshefa na wahara kushivika oma akuro ayo kupitira mohorike radio station ayo Eagle FM. Enya mkulo olongaha. Ninge kwa tafano na Monica kushikondosho ipindi konorahe tatu imwe, heari imwe, ne heari, imwe imwe no hamano. That is 081-7147-116. Mwamberewa konorahe tatu natu, mbali ohe tatu vatatu, ne nola no natu. Nenge dumo emaila ku monica@eaglefm.com.na. Opo mwane oshijemo shiri nawa.
Eagle FM, the eye.